caves, hermitages, monasteries, and forced to just cultivate the mindful living. This is the only reason why they even have been building and creating all these wonderful monasteries, hermitages, more than 1,000 years. In the Tibetan tradition, we have monasteries where you can go there and become monk or nun and to practice basically mindful living. Sometimes the monasteries get a little bit too busy, and so the monks and nuns feel that they cannot actually practice easily the mindful living in the monasteries, which is permeated with all kind of activities, daily chores and business, as well as also interpersonal connected activities. And so they even leave the monastery, go into what we call retreat, means in the mountains, which is a hermitage. They build these hermitages where they can be by themselves, or they might have a few friends who do nothing but try to live the mindful living through their spiritual practice, such as meditation, sadhana, writings, as well as also readings of the sacred scriptures. Then in the ordinary society in Tibet, we have this day-long practice known as Nyoni. It is a day-long fasting ceremony where everybody almost participated in this day-long fasting ceremony, regardless of who you are, monk or nun or lay people, old, young. Sometimes everybody in the whole village would actually observe this day-long fasting ceremony known as Nyoni. And also in the morning, somebody will give the vow to the entire village, vow about non-violence, ahimsa, vow about practicing awareness, mindfulness, and also we then do sometimes these beautiful rituals and ceremonies, often the sadhana of Avalokiteshvara. Avalokiteshvara is bodhisattva as well as also Buddha in Mahayana tradition that represents the universal love, or all embracing love and compassion, who is also identical with the Kuan Yin. As you know, many people in the Far East love as well as worship the Kuan Yin. Kuan Yin is a sacred representation of the universal love. In my hometown, I remember we used to observe this day-long fasting ceremony known as Nyoni. We'll get a very early morning, and somebody, lama or monk, will give us the vow. We take the vow until the sunrise next morning, and then we spend the whole day trying to be very mindful. We'll be reciting mantras, prayers, try to be kind towards each other at least. And then there are people who also know how to meditate, how to carry the awareness and mindfulness all day long. That's also a way of cultivating the mindful living, even though usually last only one day, but at least it gives people taste how wonderful, how healthy, how liberating it is to spend a whole day and to cultivate mindful living in the spirit of the Dharma, the spiritual practice. And yet, many people don't have sometimes the right intention or the capacity to actually practice mindful living in everyday life, and therefore I felt that this would be a very wonderful topic that goes along with what I have been offering and what also this center offers. But I didn't have so much time to prepare this talk, except just a few hours ago. I arrived here and then I meditated a little bit to prepare this talk, Mindful Living. Of course, we all know, many of us know what mindful living is. To the best of our ability, that's what we are trying to do. We are trying to cultivate mindful living. But then also sometimes it can be very helpful to have a very specific guidelines, structure, even categories of a certain discipline as a way to practice mindful living. But first, before we talk about these guidelines, let's talk about unmindful living. Is there unmindful living? Actually, there is. There's unmindful living. Sadly, many people in this world are actually leading unmindful living every day without any kind of sense of awareness. This is kind of shocking, and that's why this world has so much problem. And many problems that we are facing right now in this world, personally, at family level or society level, are not actually a product of the external challenges that we are facing, but mainly manifestation of the state of consciousness that we are living in, consciousness that is very much dominated by unawareness, and that's why there's so much confusion, anxiety in this world. And also there's a lot of unkindness in this world. Maybe that has been all along, but there's unkindness in this world where we hurt each other for no good reason, even though we don't have to hurt each other. Just a few days ago at my temple, I co-led this wonderful weekend-long meditation retreat. Before that, I had the fortune to also co-lead another tantric Buddhist practice known as Chut in Creston, Colorado. But after that, we also had this weekend meditation retreat led by myself and another two Buddhist teachers. The whole idea is to bring Buddhist teachers from three different major lineages, the Tibetan Buddhism or Vajrayana, Zen, and then Theravada. We have invited truly good men, very long time friend of mine, wife of Jack Confield, who kind of represent the Theravada tradition, and then I decide to represent the Tibetan Buddhism. And then another wonderful teacher, his name is Norman Fisher, right? He came there, wonderful teacher and person, and he's a Zen rope, and he is a very respected Zen teacher. Then we took turns for our talks. One of us will talk for 25 minutes, and then our chant leader would hit the gong, which is a sun that you must stop right now, be mindful. And so the other teacher have the chance to talk another 25 minutes. And then I was curious about what Norman would say, since he's a Zen teacher, because there's this kind of rumor that you cannot really expect what a Zen teacher would say. They can be very spontaneous. So I was very curious about what he's going to say. He began this talk by saying that we human beings do awful things to each other. And that someone was very moving in a very strange way, because it is true that we human beings do a lot of awful things to each other, and we do amazing things to each other. It's not like we're always doing awful things to each other, but I think we do sometimes lots of awful things to each other. Of course, war is terrible. There have been countless wars in this world that claims lives of millions, millions, and then even everyday life, I think people sometimes, as human beings, we do awful things to each other, knowingly, unknowingly, and you see these situation being manifest in the politics and also in interpersonal relationship. But all these are actually manifestation of the unawareness that is pretty much ruling our consciousness collectively everyday life. And therefore, many people live without any awareness, which is unmindful living. And so best really remedy for all the problems that we're facing in this world is not some kind of new technology or a new government. Yes, we can have a new government, but then sooner or later we realize that the government is not perfect. Or we can vote a new politician, we'll be very happy for a few days or a few months, but sooner or later we realize that the politician is not a messiah. All our problems continue to perpetuate until we begin to turn our attention inward and to bring about a revolution from within, not from outside. Perhaps you notice that there is this kind of collective desire right now to incite some kind of revolution. Of course, throughout history there have been many revolutions. In the 1960s there was a big revolution, which was countering cultural revolution. But now also you feel that many people are actually almost worked up emotionally, and they wanted to have revolution, they want to change everything around, because they see the imperfect whatever behavior in this human world, as well as imperfect structure, imperfect this and that. But the true revolution only comes from our consciousness. Until we change our consciousness, nothing really changes fundamentally. Either ourselves or the whole society, everything tends to continue in the same way through different maybe forms. But there's no true transformation until we turn our attention inward. Remember, one of my favorite jokes that you have heard many times is that this Buddhist monk went to the street and tried to buy a hot dog from the street vendor. The street vendor said, "How would you like to have the hot dog?" The monk said, "Make me one with everything." And then he gave the money, but then the street vendor didn't give the changes. Then monk said, "Where's my changes?" The street vendor said, "The change comes from within." This is a very good reminder. Change really comes from within, not just in that joke. But somehow we always forget that, even though it's such a age-old wisdom, we kind of know that. It's not just, this is like some kind of brilliant mystical revelation. Really, change comes from within? Oh, I didn't know that. If I knew that, I would do that 20 years ago. I would be a very different person. right? This kind of message has been given by whatever, Buddha and all these great thinkers, mystics, these great Western philosophers, like Stoic philosophers. It's not really new idea, but somehow as a group, we humanity can't forget how important it is to turn our attention inward and to really change our consciousness. This is what we're doing, and though there are of course people, groups, communities who are very much determined to lead the mindful life by going inward and to change their consciousness like yourself. Tonight you all come here because you do have this authentic aspiration to bring about change from within, otherwise you not be here tonight. I'm very much inspired by your presence, not because I'm speaking or it doesn't really matter whoever speaks, whoever is sitting on this stage tonight, but what inspires me is that we all come here together with that authentic aspiration, otherwise we don't need to be here. There are so many other things that you can do tonight, way more entertaining than my talk, especially if you have access to Netflix. You know, this is very boring what is happening, talking about changing consciousness. The Netflix got all these TV series these days. You know, you can just watch one series, the next series, and you'll be pretty much entertained all the time. So thank you so much for coming here for the benefit of all, not just for the benefit of yourself, but for the benefit of the entire humanity. And I always quote Thomas Merton, actually, because somebody introduced his work to me, even though he was a Christian writer, but he was also a friend of Buddhism. Somebody introduced me his books long time ago. Since then, I have been reading his books. One of my favorite books is called No Man is an Island, and that Thomas Merton made this very shocking statement, which you may have heard already many times me quoting, that he said basically he said the world is very much dead. He said the most ordinary people are dead and most religious people are only half awake. So here Thomas Merton is talking about that most people are actually living pretty much unmindful, unmeditative, uncontemplative life, and where their mind and heart are ruled by their unconscious habits as well as also the unawareness self. And he saw that so clearly. And therefore, the purpose of really sacred teachings, like Buddhist teachings, is to help us to break that habit and to become more contemplative and to also go inside and to begin to change our heart and our consciousness. So, but we need sometimes a specific guidance, daily guidance, how to embrace the mindful living in each and every day, not just one day here and there. You can do that. Of course, you can go to some spiritual retreat, or you can do nyoni, like in Tibet, or you can go to some Buddhist meditation retreat for 1 week, and then after that, and we can always go back to all our old habits as if nothing has ever happened. So I tell you one funny story about that. Very recently, at this Chut retreat, Tantric Buddhist retreat, in question, there's a man. He's a dentist. And he's a meditator, but he has never done anything like that we were doing there. We were doing this very quite colorful and very, very strange authentic Buddhist practice by blowing trumpet and playing bell and dhamma and singing all day. And we are visualizing in our mind that all these Buddhas are dancing everywhere. So it's a very wild practice. So we told everybody to make sure they know what they're getting into before they come to the retreat. But there's a gentleman who always comes to my silent meditation retreat. Anam Thapten's leader, another one of those silent meditation retreats. And he bought ticket, he showed up, and then he knew what he's getting into, and then they told me, the retreat organizer, there's an emergency that you must solve. There's an emergency going on. And turned out that he was a little bit scared and shocked by learning what he's getting into. Then I said, well, let's talk with each other. You're already here, maybe it's good not to change your plane ticket. Stay here. If you think that all the practices that we are doing are too strange, there's another cabin you can go there, just do a certain meditation, and then maybe come out to hear some of my talks. If that's too much, then please go ahead and book ticket. You can leave this retreat ground. And then he said, that sounds very good, something you can do. And then he showed up to our retreat. We start blowing trumpet. Not just trumpet, but as opposed to human thigh bone trumpet. You know, this already scares you. And then drum and bell, and everybody knew what we are doing. It's a tantric Buddhist kind of almost like shamanic practice. It's very powerful practice, which is to cut through your identification with your neurotic tendencies. But I saw that he got a little bit confused, scared, but he was trying his best and he kept coming back. And then one time I saw that his whole face is changing. So I was wondering and worrying about him. And he said at this spontaneous meeting that he saw all his neuroses that he never saw before, how selfish he is, how arrogant, how mean, and he wrote 30 neuroses. Isn't this amazing? He wrote the whole 2 pages filled with the list of neuroses that he discovered, and neurotic tendencies. And then I was so moved. I said, I'm so happy that you came here and you are melting, you are transforming. Since I've known you, I have never seen that you're melting, you're transforming at this level, even though you came to so many of my meditation retreats. So I was very inspired, and I told one of the organizers, he's transforming. The organizer said, don't worry, once you go back to his dental office, all his neuroses will come back. which made me sad, that statement. I didn't want to believe that person's narrative, but I'd like to believe in my heart that he is transformed forever. And he's never going to completely go back to his old self, his old habits. But the point is that, yes, we can go to these spiritual practices and gatherings like Nyoni or whatever, mindfulness meditation retreat or Zen meditation or Dzogchen meditation or Sadhana retreat and have an incredible experience, but then often when we go back, we lose that state of consciousness, and as this relapse happens, we fall back to all our old habits, and to really, and again, continue that unmindful living. And therefore, in order to embrace that mindful living in every day, it's important to have some kind of daily spiritual practice that you do every early morning, regardless of how busy you are. Either you have the 10 minutes or 5 minutes or 20 minutes to sit down and go through that daily practice to basically set tone for the whole day. Often it's very powerful to set formally as the way Buddhist tradition teaches, and also sometimes very useful to recite sacred verses, liturgies, or poems that help us to really hold the intention that you are going to live the whole day with awareness, or to live a mindful living whole day. And with that, then also can be useful to come up with some kind of categorical structure as guidance on how to live a mindful living. I think I come up with 5 points that I want to share with you tonight. I was taking a little bit of break at somebody's space here in Seattle, and then I was meditating as a preparation for this talk. 4 or 5 points popped up in my mind as a part of living mindfully, which I want to share. I think first is a daily meditation. Second is, hope I remember now, the first is a daily meditation. The second is nonviolence. Third is an act of kindness. And fourth is sacred ceremonies. And let me talk about these four things. And these four things are something that you want to do everyday life. In the morning, when you have time to sit down and chant your verses, poems, it's good to remember that you're going to practice those 4 points. The first is a daily meditation. So daily meditation is a way to basically bring about awareness here and there throughout the day. Of course, very important to sit in the morning formally. If you have a cushion, sit on that. You can maybe have a bell, you can ring it, or a gong, or you can even burn incense. I strongly recommend you to even create a little bit of almost a sanctuary in your room, in your space, like point to one place as your sanctuary where you're going to meditate. And then you can even create an altar, like a sacred images, image of Buddha, or Kuan Yin, or Pama Sambhava, or Tara, or whatever sacred image you have affinity with. And then you can even burn incense if you don't mind, or light candles. And then you might like to recite your chant, your liturgies, and then meditate. And then throughout the day, you might like to actually pause here and there. It's hard to keep sometimes very strict schedule, but in your mind you can vow in the morning that you're going to practice meditation here and there throughout the day. One time somebody gave me a ride from my house to San Francisco Airport, and we were driving on the Golden Gate Bridge, Bay Bridge. This was maybe 5 years ago. And then suddenly, while we were talking, I don't remember the nature of our talk, and we were not gossiping, that's all I remember, luckily. But my friend and I were talking quite a lot, and suddenly the sound went off. He said, "Oh, I have to be in awareness, I have to meditate right now." And he said he had this, has this app, this program in smartphone that makes noise periodically, who knows, you can program. And that noise remind him to pause and meditate. Whereas in the East, if you live in the monastery, there are all these reminders happening all day from morning to the evening that invite you to meditate, to be in the more awakened state of consciousness. Either the sound of bell, or sound of the gong, or sound of dhammar, or sound of somebody chanting. You'll be pretty much bombarded all day by all these, you might like call sacred reminders to be in the awareness. Actually, I was in Malaysia one time, and I went there, and I kind of forgot why I went there. I went there to teach, but with all the excitement, all these exotic fruits, the good food, the tropical climate, new country. I was so excited that I remember I totally forgot all my daily practice a few days. I slept very long, early morning, because the weather is very warm. And then when I woke up, I was thinking about what I'm going to eat. Maybe I should try some Indian food or Malay food. Or maybe I should try that this exotic fruit. And then that moment, this sound of a loud speaker came from one of the mosques, Islamic temple. It was really wonderful. It just helped me to remember what I'm supposed to do. So I sat to meditate, chant the Buddhist prayers along with the sound of the loud speaker coming from the mosque. It's such a great reminder. And just like that, you can have all these reminders in those sacred traditions that invite you constantly to be mindful, to meditate, to pray, or to be in alignment with the sacred, or to be in alignment with the highest principle, whatever that means, either love or awareness or the whatever, emptiness or primordial Buddha or the divine. And then meditation is in some sense very simple actually. Meditation, what is really meditation? To me, meditation is to just step away from your mind for a while. That's really what meditation is in a simplest way, just to step away from your mind. And so there's this sudden space happens between you and your mind, and then you are witnessing in the spirit of non-judgment whatever is happening, your thoughts, your emotion, your mood. You will have this kind of experience watching the river of existence flowing through you, but you no longer are lost in your thoughts. You're no longer caught up in your emotions. Whereas without that awareness, that experience of stepping away from your mind, often we are all the time actually lost in our thoughts. We're caught up in our emotions pretty much all the time, every day. And even we don't know that is happening. That's the sad thing. We even don't know that we're living unconsciously every day. For example, during one of those meditation retreats in Idaho, I invited a whole group of people during an afternoon session to look inside and to identify their belief systems. As a human being, we all have these belief systems, and some of them are not very healthy. Some of them are really destructive. So, and some of them are very much destructive, that can cause lots of pain, unnecessary suffering to yourself, to other people. And so I invite everybody to look inside and to recognize their thought patterns and belief systems. And then this wonderful person approached me and she said, "I didn't know that even I had belief systems until today." This is a very shocking revelation. She said she did not know until that day that she has all these belief systems. This is quite shocking, because truth is that we are walking with just huge suitcase of belief systems, right? It doesn't take really long time to identify our belief systems. We have all kinds of belief systems. The belief systems about the world, the reality, the past, future, who we are, that about right and wrong and good and bad, about pretty much everything. All our value system is based on our own belief systems, and all the notion of reality that we have based on pretty much a belief system. And we are constantly relating to the world, relating to each other, not through sometimes intelligence, but through our belief systems. Just like that, we are very much lost in our thoughts and also in our emotions. And in the modern day, people really actually don't know how to work with their emotions. We all have a little bit, can I say, emotional problem, can I say that? Yeah, modern world does not know how to manage their emotions. We are not very good how to work with the emotions, whereas some of the ancient cultures might have actually better practice or better even habit in terms of managing how their emotions. I think in the modern days we are very much untrained with our emotions. We have all these emotions as usual, and then we don't know what to do. We are lost in them, and we constantly act on our emotions. And sometimes we don't have even sense of self-restraint and not to act upon our emotion. That's why you see there's even a road rage, which is a sign that people kind of don't know how to work with their emotions. Therefore, meditation is just pause. That's all you need to say. Actually, sometimes it's good to recite some phrases if you feel that you just don't know how to meditate out of nowhere. You can say witness, just say that word, witness. If you say witness, automatically your whole being is going to be in that mode of a non-judging witnessing of your thoughts, emotions, and then they're happening as usual. Your thoughts, emotions are happening, but there's no more this kind of energetic pull that drag you into your thoughts, emotions, and become totally lost and bound by them. That's a meditation, and therefore it's important for us to make vow to practice the meditation throughout the day by remembering to pause and witness here and then, maybe every half hour if we can. And then the second point is, the second point of mindful living is ahimsa, non-violence, which is the most important spiritual practice that we all should actually take into our heart. Why do we have to practice non-violence? Do we harm others? And sometimes innocently we might be actually harming others. Of course, we all know violence. We all have been traumatized by violence. Today, even I had talk with Phyllis about that. There's so much trauma in our heart. I think most people, human beings, have been traumatized, not by tigers, not by wolves, not by mountain lions, but by humans. Who traumatize us? We traumatize each other. I think everybody has been traumatized in this world, and which is a fact that we cannot deny. Many women have been traumatized. We all know that many women have been traumatized, and also many men have been traumatized too. So there's a trauma, but trauma comes from that. There's violence happening in the human world. Violence that is pretty much a part of our life that even we can recognize it. Violence can be actually channeled through thought, through, of course, action, but also through words sometimes, but also even through thoughts. Let's say if I'm judging somebody harshly, I'm actually causing harm to that person. If I'm thinking of somebody and judging, criticizing, condemning that person, indeed my conscience is already actually committing violence to that person, because that person has nothing to do with my ideas, my opinions about who that person is. And then, now, I think our sense of nonviolence is growing as time goes by. We are talking about nonviolence towards animals, towards insects, not just towards humans. Of course, the traditions like Buddhism and Jainism have been talking about non-partial, all-embracing non-violence throughout history. But in the Western world, non-violence, all-embracing non-violence, is actually quite a new concept. There are not so much, as far as I know, religious traditions in which they teach non-violence towards animals, whereas this is a very much central concept in the Buddhist tradition. And then we can also practice non-violence towards the environment. Recently I had this wonderful conversation with somebody, how to practice non-violence towards the environment. And then this person said, I practice non-violence and trying to protect the environment. All I do is, she said, when I go to bathroom, when I wash hands, I never use those paper towels. Instead, I wash my hands on my clothes. It's perfect, and my clothes get dried within a few minutes. I said, this is a genius idea. And so I have been trying to do that. Works very well, actually. It's kind of much easier, you know, you have to go somewhere and to get that towel paper, and sometimes the sensation not so soft either, you know. They smells bad, some of this towel paper. So I start washing my hands and then like do this. Ah, really? And then it's kind of nice, see? And then in half hour it's all dried. Except, you know, you are saving the trees, the environment, and also maybe you are saving some money for that business, whoever owns that space. You see, non-violence can be done through all this simple act. And then, of course, there are many ways we can practice non-violence. Of course, I'm not recommending to become vegetarian, but it's nice to sometimes think about our actions might have an impact on the life of other people, not just human beings, but also animals as well. So our sense of nonviolence and compassion is actually growing, which is very good news. Perhaps we are kinder to animals than ever entire human history. It's a good time to be a dog. Can I say that? Actually, you know, I have one dog. We have a few dogs in my family. Sometimes I think I feel they have better life than me. Not always. Sometimes I think I have better life, but sometimes I feel they have better life. They don't have to work. All they do is eat and play. And I feel we are doing everything to serve them as a family. So, see, the awareness of nonviolence, compassion is growing in the whole human consciousness, not just in one culture, but in all cultures, whereas animals treat so terribly in the past. I remember when I was growing up in Tibet, in eastern Tibet, when somebody dies in my village, they invite me and other lamas. I was a lama at that time. I used to preside over some of the puchas, and sometimes I was an umzat chant leader. I played all these different roles. And then there's one man, he's a midget, and everybody invite him to recite prayers. He's like a little bit of a clown. He's a very funny person. He's not lama, but he's not lay person. So he's extremely funny, and they always invite him to recite prayers along with the lamas when somebody dies. His name is Sherna Dorje. I remember he's a very short person. And then he remembers two songs that he can chant from his memory. We always beg him to sing these two songs. And he would pick up lead of a pan or head of a shovel, and he will beat with a stick, and then he will sing one of these two songs. One was a song written by Phattor Rinpoche, a great Tibetan mystic. Another one was composed by this channeler who felt that she went to other world and talk to a spirit of dogs. And in one of the visions, one dog who died sent message to the humanity. And this dog said that the human beings don't understand me. I was so hungry, I was abused, and it was a very tormenting to watch my sponsors eating all this delicious food. I was cold in the winter when they chained me outside. And he was seeing that while he's beating the head of Shiva, and we all will fall apart and we'll be crying. And I remember that everybody would feed their dog very well for a few days. They become really nice towards the dog for only a few days, and then they all go back to the same habit. Even though it's a Buddhist culture, but I don't think we knew how to be really kind towards dogs and yaks. We have been abusing them, but now it's already changing because there's a sense of our awareness of nonviolence and compassion is on the rise as a part of the evolution. So that is a nonviolence. So when we think of other people, try not to judge them, try not to think about them negatively. I don't think we ever should judge anybody harshly. Even we may sometimes have a disagreement with somebody, but never really think somebody so badly, like thinking that person is totally sinned or full of flaws. Or we even tend to condemn people in our mind, which is a form of violence. So violence can be done through thoughts. And therefore, every morning when we wake up, we might like to say, today I'm going to practice nonviolence. I will not harm any beings or anybody through my thoughts, my words, my action to the best of my ability. And then the third is the act of kindness. And this is also very important. We might like to vow every early morning, today I'm going to practice the act of kindness. And then as day goes by, you'll find, if not thousand, but hundred opportunities where you can practice the act of kindness. There's always going to be somebody who's ready to receive your act of kindness. Sometimes you can help people in a big way, sometimes you can help people in a very insignificant way, but maybe whatever you do means a lot to that person. Maybe you can say a kind word to somebody who is very much feeling lonely and confused. Your words, your kind words actually can completely change the consciousness of that person. Or you can maybe sometimes offer something so simple to a friend who is visiting you. You can offer a nice cup of tea. Actually, I experienced the act of kindness this evening. I stayed at her house just before I came here. She hosted me for the afternoon, me and my friend. And then she cooked this amazing food. It's best on the Silk Road recipe or something like that. It's already exotic, doesn't it? The Silk Road recipe. And she prepared the dinner for us. And also she prepared the bedroom for me so I can take a nap. And she offered this amazing, delicious food. It was a portobello that was cooked in the oven. On top is a spinach, garlic, onion, and oregano she put. And then she also served this really exotic stew with a French recipe, but Indian ingredients, something like that. So I felt there's so much kindness in this world. I felt I was showered by kindness, and I felt I have so much energy to teach tonight because of kindness, right? So I hope I'm not talking too much, you know. So we need the kindness. Let me go to the heart of matter. Now, one time, you know, I fly quite a lot, so they sometimes upgrade my seat. And they put me into first class sometimes because I have so much mileage. I never buy first class, it's too expensive, but periodically they upgrade my seat, they put me in first class, especially with the United Airlines, because I've been flying so many times. And then I remember one time I decided to practice kindness when I went to the airport. It's a great place to practice kindness because there are so many people just running around. And then they said, oh, you have, your seat is upgraded. So I said, this is good, but I have a little bit of guilt. I don't know, maybe it's called first class guilt or something like that. I thought, I don't deserve this. This is a little bit strange. But I was kind of happy, it was a long flight. I felt I'm really fortunate. And then I said, maybe I should not. Then I already sat on the seat, it is really comfortable. And then my mind says, maybe you should give this to some old people. But my body says, no, I love this. So that's kind of internal conflict between my mind and my body. Because my mind trying to be very holy and, you know, transcend, my body is very primal. So my body won eventually. So I never give away that seat to anybody. I enjoyed everything they offered, the food and drink. And my body was so happy. So that's kind of example that trying to find opportunities here and there to practice random kindness. If you live in the Bay Area, there was a bumper sticker a few years ago which goes, practice random kindness, which is such a wonderful reminder. But I can't even really give examples. There's so many ways that we can practice act of kindness. Like even tonight, perhaps you can find so many chances while you're here to practice act of kindness. You can smile at somebody, or maybe, who knows, maybe you can just bow to somebody like this. Or who knows, maybe you can offer a cup of a glass to somebody. Or maybe, who knows, maybe you can pick a flower, or there are no flowers, give it to somebody, stranger you even don't know. Or maybe when you go outside, maybe let somebody walk before you. So please walk, and while you're holding the door, you see there's just unbelievable amount of opportunities every day that we can practice kindness. And the last one is the sacred ceremony. The sacred ceremony. You don't need to be a priest or lama or shaman to perform ceremony. Everybody actually knows how to do ceremony. Human beings are actually kind of creatures of ceremony. We already know how to do ceremony. We do often ceremonies which belong to tradition, and we also do our own ceremonies, spontaneous ceremonies. We're actually kind of ceremony masters by our birth. Does this make sense? And then if you are part of a sacred tradition, you perhaps have already daily ceremonies that you do, like chanting in the mornings, and then, or even when you eat together, you often offer blessings, you chant prayers to bless the food. That is also a ceremony too. So I would strongly recommend all of you do some kind of either traditional ceremony or your own ceremony, because what does when you do ceremony, actually the ceremony has the power to take you away from the thinking mind, and it opens your heart and to the beauty, to the wonder, to the sacredness of the life, the existence, and of each moment. And you can do ceremony, your own ceremony. Maybe now and then you might like to maybe read some poems here and there. Or maybe now and then you like to play music, certain music, and dance whenever you can as a sacred ceremony. Or now and then you might like to sing some spiritual songs, beautiful poems. And that has meaning of sacredness, surrender, holiness, celebrating life or nature. And there are so many beautiful Buddhist prayers you can do. And also there are many sacred poems, verses that you can read as a part of this daily sacred ceremony. I always, when I remember, try to do some ceremony when I eat. Doesn't really matter wherever I am. I'm doing more and more this sacred ceremony in everyday life. It doesn't matter either I'm drinking a tea at airport. I try to do some ceremony. I chant, if I remember, the Sanskrit mantra, Ramyam Kaum Om Ahum. Very simple. The whole idea that you are purifying and you are transforming even that cup of tea as a sacred feast. So you consume it and your heart is open. You let the river of life wash all your sorrow, all your worry, all your anxiety, and feel that you are in union with the sacred, the divine. So that is the sacred ceremony. And that's how we can live a mindful living. Thank you everybody so much for coming here tonight, and thank you so much for your invitation. Thank you. Gratitude to you all.